But we talk a lot here on the air about environmental consciousness and impact and what we can do on an individual level to be sustainable. But the reality is, until we cut down on mass waste, it's going to be really difficult to make some meaningful global changes. Well, one UNC professor and his lab are taking a stab at that bigger approach, specifically around plastics. Frank Leibfarth with the UNC Chemistry Department is examining how to make plastics more reusable and also more valuable. And he joins me in studio today to talk a little bit about that work and the goals of it. Frank, thank you so much for taking the time. How are you?
I'm wonderful and excited to talk to all the Hill listeners.
Absolutely. So let's start with the literal basics of what you guys do when it comes to plastics. What are plastics typically made out of, and what are you guys studying to try and change about plastics?
So plastics are typically made from petrochemical resources that come from refining crude oil. Right? Crude oil is taken up from the ground, and most of that crude oil is used to make fuel. But to make fuel, you have to refine that crude oil into, right, octane, that is the primary component of gasoline. And in that process, there are a number of petrochemical byproducts, some of which are these small molecules we call ethylene and propylene. And it turns out that the petrochemical industry originally saw those as waste products that are gases, so they couldn't just release them into the atmosphere. So they said, well, if we solidify them, right, that's the most convenient way to dispose of them. And it turns out when you solidify them, these are things like polyethylene and polypropylene, the plastic bag you get at the grocery store, what your milk carton comes in, actually the outside of most cars these days. So it turns out they could, at the time, back in kind of the 50s and 60s, when we discovered how to turn those gases into plastics, they figured out they could sell them for a few pennies a pound, right? And that was a nice little revenue stream. Well, as it turns out, we've found that those materials are incredibly useful for lots and lots of things. That has led the petrochemical industry to make more and more of them, see them as a more distinct revenue stream, especially as the use of fuel goes down as we all switch to electric cars. And now, right, they're becoming more and more prevalent, and now we're dealing with the consequences, right, of the vast expansion of that production of plastic.
Gotcha. And so what you guys are specifically looking to do is change the chemistry in some ways, right, to make it more valuable. What is the purpose of making it more valuable? And when we're talking about changing the chemistry, exactly what does that entail?
Yeah, so one of my lab's goals is to make the plastics economy more sustainable, right? Plastics are really important. They drive a lot of modern life, but we create far too much plastic waste, and currently we're really inefficient at recycling it. So the U.S. recycles less than 10% of the plastic waste. It's really good to throw your plastic container into the recycling bin, but less than 10% of what you throw in that recycling bin actually gets recycled. And one of the reasons that is because plastics recycling is not an economically viable process for most plastics, right? The recycler or, you know, your city government or your county government or the state government has to actually pay extra money to see that recycling happen. So my lab's philosophy is, can we do, instead of recycling, what we call upcycling? So could we turn that plastic waste into a more valuable material? That would create an economic incentive for recycling. It would encourage recycling sorting facilities to upgrade their equipment to better sort plastic, which leads to, you know, more than that 10% being recycled. And hopefully, right, that economic benefit would drive plastics recycling. So how we do that, because we're a chemistry lab, is we actually change the chemistry of polyethylene and polypropylene, the two plastics I mentioned before. So those two plastics account for about 55% of world plastic production, so over half. And from a chemistry standpoint, they're made of some of the strongest bonds we know about, carbon-carbon bonds, carbon-hydrogen bonds. So typically, they're really difficult to do much with, right, which is why we don't recycle them well. Well, my lab, you know, we're in the chemistry department. We actually collaborated with chemists who do drug discovery, right? And they've developed this really interesting chemistry to take medicinal lead compounds and react, you know, functional groups with CH bonds to discover if, right, maybe they would be more efficacious in a drug-type context. So we took that same idea and said, hey, maybe we can actually use this concept of reacting with those really strong carbon-hydrogen bonds, but on plastic waste. So we found in a recent study that we could use that, what we call CH functionalization chemistry. We could use it in the infrastructure that's already available to process plastic waste. And we could make a material that was polyethylene, so a milk jug, and turn it into a really high-strength elastomer that has about 5.5 times the toughness of polyethylene. And this is a material that is analogous to a material called Surlyn, which is used in really high-end packaging. It's actually the second layer in a lot of golf balls because it's really resilient and really tough.
Interesting.
So you can see how that's, right, like a golf ball is worth a lot more money than a milk jug, right? So hopefully if we can continue to improve this process and actually get it to where we can implement it, right, we can derive value from that using plastic waste as a starting material, right, which is effectively free. And then we can create an economic incentive to recycle more, to sort better, and to drive that economy.
We're speaking with Frank Leibfarth, who is an associate professor in UNC's chemistry department, and we're talking about his lab focused on the material makeup of plastic. And when you say that you guys are testing on this plastic waste, what exactly does that mean that you guys are doing in labs? Is it a lot of burning things, or you're not changing how do you change the molecular kind of makeup of plastic in this way? I know this is getting down into the weeds, but I'm just so curious.
Yeah, a little into the weeds, but that's fine. So typically, how your plastic is processed, right, is right. A petrochemical company will make a polymer or a plastic, and then they'll actually just create these little granules, which we call plastic pellets, right? And they'll send them to somebody who wants to process them into a part. And they run them through what's known as an extruder. So essentially, you can think of this as a hot glue gun, but that operates at much higher temperature, right? And operates for plastic. So you can put it through this hot glue gun, it melts, right? And then you can form it into whatever shape you want. And that's what makes, right, all the different shapes of plastics that we see, and many things in the room we're currently sitting in. So what we wanted to do is take advantage of kind of that hot glue gun. So what we do is we sprinkle in a little bit of a specialized reagent, right, that does this chemistry. And it's actually the heat in that kind of hot glue gun, what we call an extruder, that initiates our chemistry. So that's one of the keys to what we're doing, is we're trying to utilize the infrastructure that's already available, right? We're creating a process that works within the processes and the infrastructure that's available. We're not, right, proposing to create a whole new plant, right, because that the capital expense of that really would make it disadvantageous to actually translate it.
Yeah, I, that's just so interesting that it is as simple, well, not as simple, but it is a tool like a hot glue gun, something that we use every day that you guys are doing this on. And you talked about, obviously, the economic incentive to try and make this change, and that flows into the environmental incentive as well. I'm sure since you guys are, you know, almost knee deep in plastic waste testing it, can you share again details on just how prevalent plastic waste is in our environment and then the impacts of that we're going to be experiencing or that we're currently experiencing?
Sure. Yeah. Again, plastics are incredibly useful, right? Like, so I was just reading this morning, if we would switch from plastic packaging to other forms of packaging, glass, aluminum, paper, et cetera, right? That's about 5.5 times the water usage, right, we need in producing those materials. It's about 5 times the weight, which leads to much higher transportation costs, much higher petrochemical usage for fuel, right, to transport that around, and about 2 times the total energy consumption. Right, so plastics are important, right, because the alternatives are in many, many ways worse, right? But what those numbers don't account for is the societal cost of all the plastic waste that we're producing. Right, in an ideal world, it gets recycled. But again, I said less than 10% of it gets recycled. Some of it gets incinerated to power recycling facilities. Now, right, you're capturing the energy that's stored in the plastic in that way, but the problem there is you're releasing all the carbon, right? So these are made from petrochemical resources, right? The Earth spent millions of years trapping all this carbon, right, into crude oil, and then we just take it out of the ground, use it for 20 seconds as a plastic bag, and then send all that carbon back up into the atmosphere. That is not ideal. And then you have the problem of, you know, the growing concern about microplastics, right, and the fact that plastics kind of are found everywhere through the food chain. And, right, we don't exactly know what effects those are happening, but, you know, I would rather not eat a lot of, like, microplastics, right? And I'm sure everybody listening feels the same. So really, fundamentally, that is my group's goal, is to create what is known as a more circular plastics economy. So plastics are useful, we know that. We take this crude oil up from the ground. We spend a lot of energy to make it into plastic, right? That carbon that's embedded in there, we should use more than once, right? We should ideally have that in a circular economy where we use it over and over and over again. So that's ultimately our goal, and that's really what drives us, right? I talked about the economic incentives, and we think about that because that's how the world works, right? If we don't think about that, right, it'll never be adopted. But what we care about is sustainability and making this more circular plastics economy. So the all the work we do to take this carbon up out of the ground, we start to reuse more and more. And I think the motivation's there. I think the technology, as long as creative scientists keep thinking about it, is there. And lots of places are moving in this direction, which is promising. But we just waited too long, right? I mean, we started making plastics on large scale in 1950. You know, you can fill up the Houston Texans football stadium is actually the right volume. We fill up that stadium up to the top with plastic every day. Like, that's how much plastic we make every day.
Wow.
Right? So we just waited too long to really start tackling this problem. So now the need is really great. The U.S. and Europe and lots of places are dedicating lots of resources, and there's lots of momentum in this direction, which is quite promising.
Once again, we're speaking with Frank Leibfarth, an associate professor in UNC's chemistry department, whose lab is focused on trying to make that more circular economy for plastics. And as you mentioned, that is very much the long-term goal here. What are some of the short-term goals as we begin to wrap up the conversation? What are some of the more short-term goals for your lab? Are there any specific hurdles you guys are trying to tackle? And, you know, again, that's the grand vision. So what are some kind of benchmarks that you guys hope to hit along the way to getting to that circular economy?
Yeah, so my lab is focused on taking the plastic waste we currently have, right, the plastics that are currently available, and making them more useful and improving the properties of the recycled material. So really, we have kind of two areas we're doing this. I told you about polyolefins or polyethylene and polypropylene. That's about 55% of plastic waste. We also have some intriguing results on polyethylene terephthalate, or what makes your water bottles or soda bottles or your polyester fabric in your clothes and carpet. We have some encouraging results there. So the idea is, right, many of these materials, when you recycle them, they have really poor properties. So nobody wants to use them, right? Maybe you could recycle, let's say, a milk jug into a black container that you would plant a pot in. But then obviously that's going to be thrown away, right? So what we want to do is make it more useful. And the short-term goals in that area, we have chemistry for both polymer classes that works. And it works in this hot glue gun extruder, which is really, really valuable, right? Because it fits into infrastructure. Now we have to focus on the hard work of, like, making those reagents cheaper, right? Making sure that the additives we put in, they improve some properties, but make sure they don't create any toxic byproducts, right? That would make this problem worse. And so those problems are, challenging and sometimes not, I guess, as flashy and exciting as, right, creating this material that it is in a golf ball, right, from plastic waste, but really important. And I think, the students at UNC who are really talented are dedicated to this idea of sustainability. And we just actually got a recent grant from the National Science Foundation really to tackle this challenge of making the reagent, smaller and cheaper, so it might actually be economically viable to move forward.
Well, that's very exciting. Is there any place that folks can go to learn a little bit more about your lab or to track y'all's progress?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can go to my lab's website, which is www.frankleibfarth.com. And there's a lot of information there. And then my lab is also working on a project taking fluorinated chemicals, or PFAS, forever chemicals, out of water.
Yes, we talk about that quite a bit here. Yeah,
yeah, and we have a big center called NC Pure that's scaling up some novel technology and then going to test it at four water treatment facilities around the state. So the website for that is www.ncpure.org.
Very exciting. Well, we'll have to have you back on air to talk a little bit more PFAS in the future. Frank Leibfarth, thank you so much for joining us here on 97.9 The Hill.
Absolutely. Thank you, Brighton.